crosswalk. And dog walking lady, when she's crossing, she should always check for turning traffic, even if she has a walk signal. There's a lot going on at intersections, but when it all comes together, it's intersection perfection. See and be seen.
Absolutely, and this is the place to be seen, WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3, also FM, and over the internet, WUSB.FM. If you want that second hour of Democracy Now!, go to democracynow.org. But for now, stay tuned for an episode of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Over there.
Yeah, you know, I didn't say it this week, but last week I said we're in hell. And I think this week we're in AP hell, advanced placement, because it's hotter than it was last week. And I wouldn't have thought that was going to happen so quickly. Hot, humid, miserable, and I don't know. It just feels like it's never going to end. Of course, it will end. It might get a severe thunderstorm today, which is always fun. The heat's supposed to break tomorrow, but we'll see. You know, every month, getting hotter and hotter. It's like that Twilight Zone episode where, you know, you wind up, the planet is winding up moving closer and closer to the sun. Everyone's getting hotter and hotter, and then it turns out to be a dream, and the person wakes up, and the planet's actually moving further from the sun, and everyone's getting cold. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, but right now it's miserable. You have to avoid doing what we did. How about that? That's always a good bit of advice. We ran an event over the weekend over in Queens, a hacker conference, over 1,000 people to deal with. I say that like it's a bad thing. No, they were incredible people. And it was just so much fun, such a great outpouring, and really, really felt like family, huge family. But it was a lot of work. And after it was over, we had to do all kinds of errands throughout the borough of Queens. And we have a van. We have an old phone company van from 1981 that we drive around to, you know, show off and just to bring things from one point to another. We also had a rental truck. And we intended to bring both back to the island after the conference was over Monday morning. And I inadvertently said to a friend of mine, sure, we'll give you a ride to LaGuardia Airport. Not a problem. I was wrong. It was a problem. It was a big problem because both of the vehicles that we had were commercial vehicles. And maybe people don't know about this, but in this particular part of the country, we have different kinds of roads. We have parkways. We have expressways. Commercial vehicles cannot drive on parkways. Now, there's a physical reason for this, and you see it occasionally on the news. Robert Moses, in his infinite wisdom and in his attempts to keep certain ethnic groups off of Long Island, built bridges very low so that buses could not bring people out to beaches. Well, I mean, that's pretty much the theory. That's why he did it. But to this day, bridges remain low on roads like the Northern State Parkway, Southern State Parkway, anything that has a parkway in it. You're almost guaranteed to see those stone bridges that certain vehicles simply cannot fit under. Every now and then, somebody goes on the road and smacks their 18-wheeler or their rental truck or whatnot into one of these bridges, shuts down the whole road, and everybody has a good time reading about it in the papers. I actually saw it happen once. I was driving to meet somebody. I saw an 18-wheeler approaching, and right as I was passing, I tried to stop him. I tried to warn him, but it's hard to convey messages while you're driving. Like, you ever try to tell somebody their turn signal is on? You know, you make a gesture, they make the gesture back, and nobody understands each other. Even trying to tell somebody their headlights aren't on, I've never succeeded in doing that. But in this particular case, trying to tell the driver that, yeah, you're about to hit a bridge, I tried. And I fortunately was past the bridge when he hit it. But it was on the news. I think it was styrofoam he was hauling. Styrofoam all over the place. Hours and hours. Anyway, that's why we have different kinds of roads. That's one of the reasons, anyway. Trucks are supposed to take the expressway. Now, there are all kinds of travel apps using GPS, and most of them run by Google. And I think Google gets some kind of kickback for when trucks crash into bridges, because they are so aggressive in steering you onto parkways. No matter what, you will always there is just no way to say, I'm a commercial vehicle and I don't want to go on a bridge. Or I don't want to go under a bridge. I keep me on a commercial road, you would think. I know there are some apps that commercial drivers use, but they're nowhere near as friendly as the ones for everybody else. So getting to LaGuardia Airport might seem like an easy thing, but when you click the mode, avoid highways, which is what you have to do to not get on parkways. Unfortunately, you also avoid the highways you can drive on. But driving through all these narrow roads and local streets, It's something, especially on a steaming hot day in the middle of summer in Queens. So it took close to an hour for what should have been a half-hour ride. And then we realized we didn't know what terminal we were supposed to go to, so we were wandering all over LaGuardia Airport. By the way, both Kyle and I will sound very tired because we're still catching up on sleep, so if I can string a sentence together, that's a win.
I have coffee this week.
You what now?
I have a tiny amount of coffee to help me.
Well, I have a big amount of coffee, but, and it's not helping as much as it usually does, but I'm trying my best.
It's also very warm.
Yeah, the heat doesn't help, and the coffee is hot as well.
But this was trouble. I mean, we were sort of operating on some amount of sleep, but maybe not the best rest ever, and just sort of extreme exhaustion with heat, and just managing all kinds of logistics and meeting certain tasks to do all of that, you know, in the right timing and stuff like that, and then to be, you know, sort of helpful. And so we were really kind of just trying to keep it together to get the end of the travels and all the sort of tediousness off our plate.
And we used two vehicles. You might ask, why do you use two vehicles to do this? Well, if you've ever seen the hacker van, there are two seats, and then there's the back, and it's not safe to have people in the back while you're moving. And then the rental truck, well, if you've seen a rental truck, it's, again, two seats. So, you know, we were three people. So I opted to have our friend ride with Kyle in the big rental truck that had air conditioning. And I drove the van that had no air conditioning, no power steering either, and was extremely grimy and hot. And I figured, you know, as long as I can keep moving, it wouldn't be so bad. But, of course, we couldn't keep moving through the streets of Queens, a lot of traffic lights. Then, as I mentioned, we got to the airport, and we didn't know what terminal we were going to. And so we had to search for it. And then when we found it, it was Terminal B. I noticed a sign. I was first. I noticed a sign saying a certain clearance that the rental truck would not meet. You were about to smack into something. I don't know what. So we had these two little radios. I don't know what you call them, family radios or something. Something very consumerish. You can get four of them for like $50, and they have surprising range. Like they can get a mile. They claim they get more than that, but we were able to communicate back and forth between vehicles using these things. So they were very handy. And I warned you, don't go there, and instead go to Terminal C, and either I can pick up our friend there and go the remaining terminal, or he can hop on a bus, a free shuttle bus, and take care of that. We opted for the latter. He got on the bus. And then, I still hadn't reconnected with you. I was on a different part of LaGuardia Airport, and you exited the airport. And that's when the radios stopped working as dependably as they had been.
And going back to, like, making sort of bad judgment calls, I had left my other, like, backup communications being in a mobile phone with you in luggage.
Yeah, it was in luggage in the back of the hacker van. That's where your phone was. So I couldn't call you. You couldn't call me. The only thing we had were our wits and those two consumer radios to try and communicate back and forth. And I heard you. I was in LaGuardia Airport still, and I heard you say that you were on a particular road. What was the road again? It was wasn't Parsons Boulevard. It was Ditmars Boulevard. That's where you were. And I heard you say something about a traffic circle on Ditmars Boulevard, so I had a sense as to where that was. But you weren't able to stay put. You had to keep moving. So when I got there, you weren't there.
And I was looking for the van. I was looking for you.
Right.
To be, like, parked or pulled off waiting for me to get out of the airport complex somewhere.
And this is where the Kafka-esque stuff kicks in, because I could hear you calling me on the radio, and I was answering you, but you couldn't hear me answering you. And you kept asking me where I was, and I kept saying, I'm trying to find you. Where are you? And you weren't hearing me, and I was hearing you. It was so frustrating. We spent about 45 minutes circling around Queens trying to find each other. And at one point, I did find you, I passed you, but something made you move before I could turn around, and you weren't there. I was convinced at that point you were trying to hide from me. But
no, I think I only got part of the message. You said turn around, but you were talking about you.
I said, I'm going on the radio. Exactly. I said, I'm going to turn around. At that point, you were starting to hear me on the radio again. So I said, I'm going to turn around. Of course, when you say you're going to do something while driving in Queens, it doesn't happen immediately. It takes a while. And so by the time I did that, I went back and I'm like, my God, where is he?
I did the exact same thing. Oh. I went around the block.
So shouldn't we have seen each other? Shouldn't we have passed again?
It was taking different streets. I think I was on like 29 or 20. 7th Avenue or
well,
something.
At least at that street. Point, we knew that we were both still alive, both still driving RSR in vehicles. But then there was more back and forth where you couldn't hear me and I could hear you. And eventually, you picked a hotel that had a sign way up high and said, I'm in that parking lot. I saw it, went right to it, and we just rested for about 20 minutes after that stressful thing. And then after that, we got to drive on the Long Island Expressway. Well, first of all, we had to find the Long Island Expressway without getting on the Grand Central Parkway. That again. And that took a while. But we finally got on the expressway, and by that time, traffic had really built up, and it was very unpleasant, for me at least. You had air conditioning, but I had to drive a very hot vehicle.
We made a stop at a fast food place.
Well, we had to, because, you know, we got to, I think, the border, the Nassau and Suffolk, and it was supposed to be only another 10 minutes for our exit, but then somebody did something, and fire trucks were involved, and everybody was stopped, and I said, Kyle, I have to get off this road, or I'm about to pass out. Seriously, I'm about to pass out, and, we just got onto Route 110 and drove down to a sort of fast food joint, and I just got a soda and some fries.
And got to be in the climate control because you didn't have anything in your vehicle.
No, air conditioning. I was sobbing, and it was just so nice of the fast food workers to gather around and console me and make sure I was okay.
Put fresh mop water on your forehead.
I have to call them.
I think that was a really, really smart move at the time, because that road was like three lanes or four lanes or something. I saw just tons of amber lights and stuff as soon as you said you were about to turn off, and everyone was staying on the road, so it seems like it had just happened, or just I don't know why it was. We felt like we were the only people exiting at that point, but when we did, I think that gave us a break.
Yes.
And also probably cut some time off that we would have spent on that in that disaster.
Yeah, there were things we could have done better, for sure, but we didn't really see all that cascading. I won't offer a ride to somebody to an airport if I only have commercial vehicles. Won't do that anymore. I'll make sure that people have phones, their phones, on them. Maybe not drive an unair-conditioned vehicle in heat like that. So if you're driving, please be careful and take care of yourself, and if you feel you have to pull over, if it becomes too much, too hot, then definitely do that. Take your time. It's not worth risking anything.
It's also somewhat helpful to your vehicle to prevent sort of overheating and premature wear of certain parts in really extreme temperatures. If you haven't already done some maintenance with that in mind. So anyway, it just it's helpful, to pull off, give yourself a break, pop the hood, or otherwise let the car cool down for a little bit, and that way you have your faculties when you're in a stressful situation with other drivers that are also stressed and overheated and stuff.
I gotta say, nobody honked at us. Kind of like what I said when we drove cross country. We got along with all our fellow motorists, because the way we feel about it when we drive, we're all in it together. We all have to take care of each other. And, it was stressful, but we got through it. And hopefully you will, too, when you're in stressful situations. And hopefully we all get through this heat.
And that notwithstanding, we are pretty exhausted, and I'm definitely a little groggy from lots of talking and stress, shall we say, of driving and frustrations. But I'm here and ready. What do you got?
All right, let's dive into it. Well, first of all, something local. what I consider to be good news, two more Long Island high schools have chosen new team names to comply with the state's Native American mascot ban. All right. They fought this for a while, and I think they finally saw reason, or maybe they realized it would be a long and ultimately fruitless fight. Half Hollow Hills High School East will become the Red Hawks this fall, according to the director of athletics for the district. And Comstock High School, right in the Port Jefferson Station, will become the Spartans, a change that will take place for the 2025-26 school year, according to their district director of athletics. The Half Hollow Hills High School East director, Deb Ferry, said, "We had a vote that included our faculty, students, community, and administration. Red Hawks was the winner, and we're very happy with it. We're also keeping our main school colors. They will remain red and black." See, not so bad. Not so bad at all. Half Hollow Hills East and Comstock join Brentwood and Serenhaka High Schools in changing team names to comply with the state's mandate against Native American mascots, imagery, and team names. Public schools statewide using Native American mascots, team names, and logos have until June 30th. When was this article written? It came out today. Or it came out actually a couple of days ago. Yeah, the 12th. Somebody didn't read through this very well. Well, that's Newsday for you these days. I have until June 30th to change the names, logos, imagery on buildings, uniforms, and playing fields, according to the mandate approved by the Board of Regents in April of last year. The order fell under the Dignity for All Students Act, enacted to create a non-hostile learning environment for students. You can mock it, you can say it's woke, but whatever, it's a good idea. And we should not have names that are offensive to a group of people, period. And you know, they get to say that. They get to decide. They get to say that you're usurping our culture here. You're using imagery without understanding its meaning. And it was just an embarrassment to see these districts insisting that they should continue to use names that clearly weren't right to use for a number of groups of people. So,
well, I would just say those are some pretty fierce names. I like it. It's tough. Those I would root for either of those or both.
Mm-hmm. Brentwood High School recently changed its name to the Spartans. Serenhaka High School changed to the Ravens. Both schools had been the Indians. Yeah. Four other districts, Sachem, East Islip, Manhasset, and Syosset, are in the process of making the change. That's that. And there are five districts on Long Island that have filed legal challenges. Amityville, Conaquat, Massapequa, Wantagh, and Wyandanch.
Well, there's still connections, too, like the Raven and animals. I mean, they're subtle and not as discriminatory, but it is kind of it's cool to have that sort of natural element in animals, and you still have it still conveys a lot of.
Yeah, but you know, you have to look at the history of how something was formed in the first place. If you know your mascot is warriors, and you have somebody in Indian headdress with a tomahawk, that's obviously something derivative of that. But if you have a picture of Dick Cheney or something, then maybe that's a different kind of warrior. And you can get away with it. But, you know, to call a team the Indians, come on already.
Yeah.
And it took forever to get the Cleveland Indians to see reason, but they did, and then the Guardians, and everybody's okay with that. And there's more Washington Redskins. Come on already.
Well, now that it's happened multiple times across a range of leagues and from local schools on up, I mean, it's really just not that big a deal. And we can actually get on with the play and what sport is, what it's all about in the first place.
Yes, definitely. Okay, well, I guess we got to talk about the incident that happened over the weekend. It's unbelievable to even be saying this, but somebody tried to kill Donald Trump. Somebody actually took a shot. Somebody actually hit him with a bullet. It grazed his ear, killed somebody else, a different bullet, I think. And, of course, the shooter was himself killed. First of all, obviously, this is horrible. This is a completely disgusting thing to have happen. And it fills me with trepidation to think that we could be moving into that kind of a world. You know, something like this has not happened since George Wallace was shot and crippled by a would-be assassin's bullet as he was running for president back, I believe, in the 70s. Of course, we had a string of assassinations prior to that. It's something that we've been mercifully spared for the most part. But to see this happen, I mean, you know, my first reaction was, yep, this is, it was inevitable somebody was going to do something like this with all the heated rhetoric and hatred that's out there. And that's why we fight so hard against those sort of things. And I'm hoping, you know, I'm seeing some signs of it with Republicans that they might get the message this time that it's, you know, you gotta cool it down a little bit and not get people so fired up that they're going to do things like this. Now, in this particular case, it was one of their own. It was a registered Republican that did this. To this date, nobody knows exactly why. But I can't say I'm surprised that somebody had easy access to a gun, which really what was it, AR-15. I'm bad with the numbers. AR-15. No reason for people to have those kinds of weapons, and now it's been used actually against Trump. It's almost inevitable that something like this happened. There are other things that were just bad ideas, like having all these outdoor rallies. Look, you can say what you want about security, and I think, you know, the Secret Service was there. You saw them, you know, jump on Trump immediately, and they have pretty good security as far as that goes. But when you're outside, it's almost impossible to keep people from sneaking into some nook and cranny someplace or to hide beforehand. It becomes so much harder than if you're at an indoor place. And I know that the Trump campaign has been advised not to do that. They chose to do that anyway. I'm not saying it's necessarily a fault, but...
Well, it's an aspect of it, you know, that points to it being a number of factors.
It is a decision.
Of how it came and
right.
came to be and transpired the way it did.
Yeah, you know, this is the kind of thing that generally, especially in a situation like this where emotions are running high, shouldn't do that. Should not have outdoor rallies where there are almost an infinite number of places where people can be.
Well, I echo a lot of what you said. I just, the two things that occur to me are that, you know, this is the entire reason why we have the political process. And some moniker of civility within the business of that political arena and process, up to and including, I think, I would hope, campaigning. And as you pointed out, it's, you know, why a lot of people had cautioned that maybe the way we're talking about one another, the way we're generalizing, the way we have... cleared our conversations of nuance, unfortunately, to the detriment of a lot of that conversation, and of course listening and not making people correct or not just because they've said something. Perhaps, you know, people do say things that they don't quite mean, or if they say it in an unusual way, there's misunderstanding. But it's also not. And so the sort of not surprising aspect also, I mean, there's historical precedent. I mean, over time, in other parts of the world, this does occur, especially, and this is why we tout our system, as I said, as boring as it might seem to people, the purpose of it is to solve and put forth, move forward the business of the people in an organized way and without letting blood. And unfortunately, in our own history, though, and this is the other thought that occurred to me, it has occurred. It has occurred that leadership has been targeted by all kinds of people. I'm sure there's ways they can be profiled and talked about. That's a different conversation, mm-hmm. not what we're talking about here. So those observations, I think, and there's a lot of other stuff. It was really chaotic. I wasn't even really aware. I was kind of preoccupied in doing other things all weekend.
Well, we were so busy.
I really just,
oh, by the way, did you hear this story? I just, there's no room in my head for this.
It took half a day for me to realize that it wasn't a joke or that I wasn't being, like, messed with. So, yeah. But it's long since passed, so it's definitely a big deal and a milestone of sorts in how a lot of how we've been approaching it and what we've been bared witness to and I think a lot of things about it. I don't know. I don't want to go off on a tangent. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not many tangents to go off on here because it's, you know, the whole thing is very, very relevant to what's happening these days. You know, I've said many times that we'd be better off without Trump running for president, and I still mean that, and I, you know, support anything that would get him out of the race, but not this, never this. And I don't think I know people that would celebrate something like that because it's ugly. It's something that changes the tone forever. And it's far below the people that we are. We can disagree. We can condemn. We can do whatever is within our power to stop something bad from happening. And I believe more than ever that a second Trump presidency would be a complete disaster for this country and would basically open the doors to fascism. And it's, it seems to be moving at a greater pace. Now, of course, the Republican convention is happening this week, and they're wasting no time using this for what it's, you know, everything they possibly can. I think that's a bit shameful, I think, to take advantage like that, as shameful as it would be for somebody to mock what happened and to say that it's something, you know, fodder for jokes. Yeah, people are making jokes, and you know what? They just need to know that's not cool. That's not cool to make jokes about an assassination. There is the Tenacious D tour was canceled because a bandmate of Jack Black's joked about it. Tenacious D is the American comedy rock duo, includes the movie star Jack Black, and they announced today the remainder of the tour would be canceled. All future plans were on pause after the band's other member, Kyle Gass, made an offhand comment on stage about the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. Representative for the duo confirmed, Black had brought out a cake at the ICC Sydney Theatre in Australia on Sunday to celebrate Gass's 64th birthday. When Black asked Gass to make a wish, he responded, "Don't miss Trump next time." You don't do stupid things like that, especially in public. I mean, people say stupid things all the time. We all know this. If you're going to say something that monumentally stupid, at least say it privately so that, you know, you don't get widely condemned. And I would certainly condemn this. There's no question about that. He even, Gass even posted an apology to social media this morning, stating that the line I improvised on stage Sunday night in Sydney was highly inappropriate, dangerous, and a terrible mistake. I don't condone violence of any kind in any form against anyone, he wrote. What happened was a tragedy. I'm incredibly sorry for my severe lack of judgment. I profoundly apologize to those I've let down and truly regret any pain I've caused. And, you know, when people mess up, you got to give them a chance. And, you know, when it's words, definitely give them a chance. And hopefully these words are sincere and this guy hasn't completely blown up his career. However, Senator Ralph Babbitt of the center-right United Australia Party has called for both band members to be deported. In a lengthy statement posted online, he said Tenacious D should be immediately removed from the country after wishing for the assassination of Donald Trump at their Sydney concert. Well, yeah, again, stupid words, but let's tone it down a bit. It's, we don't need more of this hot-headedness going on out there. Now, you know, all this is happening while the Secret Service knew of an Iranian plot to assassinate Trump, and presumably the campaign knew about that as well. NSC directly contacted the Secret Service at a senior level to be absolutely sure They continue to track the latest reporting. The Secret Service shared this information with the detailed lead. The Trump campaign was made aware of an evolving threat. In response to the increased threat, Secret Service surged resources and assets for the protection of former President Trump. All of this was in advance of Saturday. Wasn't enough. Wasn't enough. And that should tell you something about having these outdoor events. They can be very, very dangerous. Now, again, you know, this was an angry white guy from Pennsylvania who got his hands on an AR-15. You know, there are so many people like that. We may never know what it is that spurred him to do this. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of theories out there. I'm not going to get into the conspiracy theories where people are convinced that in the period where Trump was on the ground, they sprinkled ketchup on his face and faked the whole thing. No, it's funny, but it's ridiculous. And do not fall for any of that. It happened. It really happened. But his other theories, like, well, maybe the guy intentionally missed him so that he'd be a hero. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's a registered Republican. I don't know if anybody's that good a shot and actually plan that well in advance and sacrifice their life in the process. Plus, there's the person that he killed and two others, I believe, severely wounded. So, no, this happened. It really happened. And, you know, Trump did the best he could and raised his fist and shouted fight. I mean, that's if you're the victim of an assassination plot, I don't think you could do better than what he did. All that said, he's still a danger to democracy, period. We cannot change that. We cannot allow this to influence any other decision. Look what happened. The Florida judge who works for Trump, she dismissed the entire case, pretty much proving she works for Trump. Yeah, the classified documents case, huge victory for the former president, right after the attempted assassination. Judge Eileen Cannon granted Trump's motion to dismiss the federal case on the basis that the Justice Department's appointment of Special Prosecutor Jack Smith violates the Appointments Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Nonsense. And nobody thought of that till now? So, I don't know if there's a way to appeal this, but, you know, it wound up in her courtroom. We always knew she was going to do everything she could to help him. Now, last Thursday, July 11th, was supposed to be Trump's sentencing in New York for the 34 counts he was found guilty of. Remember, he's a convicted felon. But because of the judges that Trump hired for the Supreme Court, they pretty much put the kibosh on that. So instead of Trump being sentenced on July 11th, it was Biden who was really being sentenced on July 11th. Somehow they managed to turn that around and have Biden have this incredibly crucial press conference on Thursday in the wake of the NATO meeting. And Trump is basically getting off scot-free every way you look. Now, that might be cause for cheering amongst Trump supporters, but what you have to realize is that abusing the law like this, and it is the law, you cannot question that it's a real courtroom with real jurors, real lawyers, and a real judge, and real crimes that he was found guilty of in one courtroom and that he's being charged with in others. This is real. Just like the assassination attempt was real. You have to face reality and own up to it. You can't just have it taken away. And that's what he's doing. And it's abuse. It's abuse of justice. And people get mad at that. So if we wind up living in a country where this guy gets swept into power because he was able to buy off all of these people and abuse the system, it's not going to be a pleasant place, and things like what happened on Saturday will become a lot more common. Because not everybody has a cool head. And when you keep abusing a system over and over and over again, keep breaking the law and coming out on top, not caring about those who don't have opportunities, it's going to blow up in your face at some point. and it's going to blow up on in all of our faces. And this country will become unrecognizable. Now, you know, all that said, boy, the Democrats have to get their act together. What is going on here? I mean, look, I know Biden has not exactly been the most impressive of all people in recent weeks. I know that. And a decision has to be made as to whether or not this is somebody that you want to pin the hopes of our democracy on. There are those who say, yeah, he can do the job. And, you know, he can do the job. He has been doing the job. He has a lot of good people around him. He has his stumbles. He says the wrong word sometimes. He seems to be weaker. But is that essential for doing the job? Is somebody who doesn't quite express himself in the best of ways, is that someone who is completely disqualified from leading the country? Maybe. But the Democrats have to decide. And they have to decide soon. Look, this, when this first happened, after the disastrous debate performance, I said this is an opportunity to strengthen the ticket. You know, Harris has done a good job. Yeah, we don't talk about her, but we should. And part of that is the fault of the administration. She should be in the limelight more. But what I'm seeing defensiveness. I'm seeing answers to questions that we all know the answer to that just don't jive with reality, you know, and people see through that. People see through that. So if the way the Democrats decide to handle this is just to cover their ears and pretend nothing's wrong and just ignore the people who have expressed concern. If the people who are expressing concern don't express that concern, except in private, well, they're doing a lot more harm by not speaking up. You have to be honest. You have to be vocal. And that is democracy. And having that conversation could actually be inspirational to people. To know that, yeah, the other guy is a dictator, and people simply follow him, right or wrong. And look, his own vice presidential pick announced this week, J.D. Vance, called Trump the American Hitler. He called him American Hitler. I don't know if Trump took that as a compliment. How do you have somebody as your vice president who called you American Hitler? Now, how does J.D. Vance answer that? Well, the media fooled me. The media was... yeah, it's their fault. They said things that weren't true. And okay, so you bought into that easily? And you want to be the vice president a heartbeat away from the presidency? And you can be influenced that easily by the likes of CNN and MSNBC and Fox and all that? Boy, you're naive. You're naive for buying into it. You're naive for thinking we'll buy into that. No. No, it doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. You see all these people that say horrible things about Trump. You know, Nikki Haley, we're going to see her tonight at the convention. She wasn't even going to come to the convention. Do you remember all the horrible things she said about Trump during the primaries? And now, well, it's okay. Not a big deal. Called him a liar. Called him a threat to democracy. But you know what? I can get past that. Anything but Biden. Anything but a Democrat. But she wasn't even going to come to the convention, and that was huge. Until the assassination attempt. Now everything's different because of the assassination attempt. So people are influenced both by fear and by seeing something unfold that's just too good a PR blitz to ignore. And so all these people are going to jump on this bandwagon and put their concerns aside. That is the Republican Party. To have the Democratic Party do something different and have their arguments in public, have a real debate about issues and come to a resolution in time for their convention in August. Boy, if they pull that off, nothing can stop them. That's democracy in action. That's the dream. So I sure hope they do something like that. I sure hope this doesn't, you know, turn into a Ruth Bader Ginsburg type of thing where pride is the most important thing. I'm not saying, you know, I don't think Biden can do the job. I think he can. But it's becoming clear that there's so much doubt that that almost doesn't matter anymore. And that the party will be weakened if all these people don't suddenly change their mind and say, oh, yeah, no, he's the best. So the question will be, who do you replace him with and how? Me? I think it should be Harris running for the president. She's the vice president. It makes sense. In polls, she's actually beating Trump. And she was picked for a reason. Well, now we basically exercise that reason. And hopefully she would pick somebody really, really good as her vice president. Like I said, tremendous opportunity. Interesting times, though. Interesting times we live in, and I honestly can't imagine what happens next. But I don't know, Kyle. What do you think of J.D. Vance? First of all, how do you get to call yourself J.D.? You know, you just sound cool. You sound like some kind of spy or something.
Not much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. He's he has a certain appeal, I guess. They wanna, with the Teamsters, and there's like this kind of appeal for maybe the middle that Biden's done a really good job of kind of articulating his case to, you know, like mm-hmm. labor and big right. projects, and they want to kind of get a little bit of that action, I think, and like, there was all this commentary about him having a beard. Like,
J.D. Vance, yes, yeah, he has like, a beard.
That's an amazing thing. And, you know, there's there's things about it, maybe, like, that subconsciously there's, like, trust or certain things that are conveyed with that, maybe, that can kind of short-circuit what people know about his policies or what he signed on to or what he disagreed or said in the past about about Trump.
Well, it disturbs me to see somebody speak out so vociferously against somebody and then say, oh, you know what, I'm just going to cast all that aside. And the campaign is even okay with that. Yeah, American Hitler. I have to assume that they think that's an insult. And then to use the lame excuse that he was just fooled by the media. That's not presidential quality, Yeah, not presidential quality to fall for something that easily.
Yeah, I guess the follow-up would be, like, does that happen to you often?
Yeah.
You know, like,
what's
are you
going to be next?
Are you doing anything to manage those symptoms?
Well, I think he reads a lot of Russian media because he's very anti-Ukraine.
Yeah, that's kind of got me. I mean, I know not everyone has this sort of exact perspective or whatever, but there's a lot of solidarity around that, and to see sort of them try to take the wind out of that and realign it and come up with this all this kind of mistruths, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's pretty upsetting, I think. Because, like, many of the people, I think, that, like myself, that grew up and have even, like, noticed in the maybe last, like, 20 or 10 or 20 years, like, just how much all of the class stuff is really the linchpin of a lot of this. And just that oligarchs everywhere... the sort of indirect and direct corruption that is abound, has a real effect, and you have to kind of fight that. You don't want to be on that that kind of day-to-day allowing it. You don't benefit from that. And I think that after a couple decades when you're an adult, like, you start... I don't want to sound too resentful or, like, negative, but this kind of rhetoric and the sort of move to try to bring in people from the Republicans, it is going to change some minds. I hate to say that. I mean, it sounds really, like, negative, but, like, I personally feel like a lot of these systems have been screwed up. And not just screwed up for me. I mean, that's a selfish kind of egotistical thing when you're talking about politics, and even, like, when you have a moment on the air like I do now. Like, I am thinking of the listeners. I'm thinking of people, you know. But the more we disintegrate this system, and the more a lot of it doesn't actually pan out, or things we've been told in the past just kind of get diverted, or not, they aren't really what they were sold as. There's exceptions. There's been a lot of, like, good work. Even, I'm thinking healthcare. I'm thinking of, you know, in that two-decade period. Mm-hmm. So there is some faith in it, but it's so obviously and openly sabotage for political wedges and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's failed us, and I think the response from even a party I agree with, you know, I feel is generally on the right side of things for that large swath of people, even with my own kind of selfish wishes in mind, I think they failed in response to it, and I don't feel served, and then when I extend that out, because I am an adult, I'm not a child. And I think about the thuggery around the world that is itself, just like American oligarchs, wanting to indirectly or directly influence and push anybody but them around. You know, there's a lot of compatriots I know that, like, they're not down with defense or, like, force, and maybe, like, failings, and the critique of our country, our nation, I think, is not a reason to get pushed around by that thuggery for another 40 years. So you want to destabilize Ukraine more? You're on your own, as far as I'm concerned, because that's not how this is going to go, as far as, you know, if I have a say about it.
Yeah.
And I am, like, I'm pretty much more clear in my power now, too. And I can't have, like, fought against and critiqued past campaigns and then see this and say, oh, so now we don't have money because we're going to become isolationists. Like, I'm sorry. No, this is going to be light work, and not supporting our moral ideals,
mm-hmm.
despite our failings, I think, is just, it's gross negligence on the world stage, well, for our station.
Speaking of the world stage, you know, one of the big things that is always thrown at the Democrats is that Trump kept us out of wars. I don't know what that means, because Trump certainly planted the seeds for all sorts of horrible things in Gaza, for instance, leaving the Palestinians out of talks. Of course, that led to all kinds of bloodshed and horror later on. And if he were in power, it would be even worse than it is right now. Ukraine basically turned a blind eye to what Putin was doing, and Biden did not. If Trump had been president during this period, there would be no Ukraine. The Ukraine would not be a country. I am certain of that. Afghanistan, they keep pointing to the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, leaving out the part where, of course, Trump set that up, set up that whole withdrawal, and not saying that the powers that be did a good job at all in doing that, but he certainly played a part in setting up the terms and the timing. So, you know, everything is not as simple as it's laid out when you have one side pointing the finger to another side. But, you know, in the case of Biden and Trump, you just have to look at certain facts to see who's lying about what, and to realize that standing up to a bully, standing up to a dictator, that is something that's to be encouraged, not discouraged. And if you're worried about, well, that could cause problems, believe me, not standing up to a bully is going to cause so many more problems down the road, and probably a lot sooner than you might think. This is something that we have to bear in mind as we watch what happens this week in Milwaukee and in the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, I'm still trying to keep it light, but yeah, I
down to our last minute, so
I'm sorry.
Not much time.
It's a lot. It's a lot to talk about, but yeah, I just you know, there's a lot of strength and a lot of individuals out there with power, and like, don't get me wrong, like, just it's not just the international stuff I'm talking about. Like, I feel failed by quite a lot, uh-huh. Right? So I want not for other things to be disrupted so that we can actually work on the things domestically that I think have not been addressed in my lifetime.
Look at it this way. Senator Menendez got convicted. Democrats are not pretending that didn't happen, calling for his resignation as well. That is what you need to do when someone is convicted of a crime or somebody is brought up on charges. You need to own up to it. You need to respect the system. And if you don't respect the system, improve the system. But don't just simply say everything is a conspiracy and we're not going to pay attention to it. Okay, we are out of time. And that, unfortunately, is the reaction. OTW at 2600.com is our email address. Stay tuned to WUSB. We'll be back next week, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yes, have fun.
Good night.